Hey, you guys, this is the Mean Magazine podcast, and I'm your host, Kristen Filipkowski. The Mean podcast is where I talk to creative, curious, and ambitious women of all ages who are brave enough to be honest on social media and beyond. They're not afraid to show their flaws, and they're finding success and joy while they're at it. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the very first Mean podcast. Today, I'm very excited to launch both an online magazine and this podcast. You've obviously already found the podcast, and you can find the magazine at meanmagazine.com. That's M-E-A-N magazine.com. The goal of both outlets is to create conversations between women of different generations. I'll be interviewing stay-at-home moms, CEOs, yoga instructors, small business owners, really anyone with a story we can learn from, regardless of how many Instagram followers they might have. My first interviewee, who happens to actually have a lot of Instagram followers, is my dear friend Marie McCarthy. She's a San Francisco-based businesswoman, jewelry maker, tattoo guru, and mom, just to mention a few of the things that keep her extremely busy. In addition to being an excellent dinner companion and travel partner, I find her life and career path so interesting and unexpected. She grew up in the Midwest, attended Northwestern University for biomedical engineering, and instead of becoming a scientist or a doctor, she went on to run two separate businesses focused on fine jewelry and tattooing. Over the years, she has acquired quite a few tattoos herself, or as she tells it, one very large tattoo. So we're here with Marie McCarthy. Marie, thank you so much for doing this podcast.
Absolutely.
Marie is a very good friend of mine and an amazing badass businesswoman in San Francisco who I admire very much. We've known each other for, I don't know.
No idea.
Okay. I had Frida when we met. So yes. She was like probably one. So 5-ish years?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm so excited to interview you because I admire you so much. And you're a woman who I've watched your life change a lot since we've met.
Definitely.
Like, you didn't have a child when we met.
Right.
And you had your teeny 300 square foot jewelry store.
Yes.
And now you have a child and you have a big jewelry store.
Everything's growing.
Yeah. On and on. Let's start out with like where you came from. You are from the Midwest. You're from...
Yes. St. Louis.
St. Louis. So tell me about your background and how you went from being interested in biochemistry, right?
Biomedical engineering.
Yeah. Okay. To being interested in jewelry and tattooing, because Marie also has an amazing tattoo shop, which we'll talk about as well. So yeah, just if you could introduce
yourself.
Basically,
I came from a pretty conventional background. Like, Midwesterners are kind of, I call them, like tribal people. They're really interested in family, like working really hard. It was a great way to grow up.
Yeah.
And it gave me my work ethic, and I'm really happy to be from there. So I went to university and I studied art history, and I also studied biomedical engineering. And I think that I got a degree in biomedical engineering just to prove to my parents that I could be a doctor if I wanted to, or yeah, I could, you know, have a career in science. And I quickly left that.
Did you feel as you were going through school that you might actually go into science or becoming a doctor?
Definitely.
Okay. So it wasn't like you were just like fooling them the whole time.
No. I took an art history elective and I loved it so much that I knew it was a problem for me.
Right.
So I decided to double major.
Wow.
But my art history thesis was actually on tattoo art as the last patron art. So I flew out here to San Francisco and went to one of the only exhibitions that was happening in 1996, you know?
Oh, cool.
So I'd always been interested in that and interested.
What does that mean, patron art, the last patron art?
It means that it's a collaboration between client and artist. And that relationship, you know, was more important throughout the ages. Mm. It's less common now, but it's still so active in doing custom jewelry and doing tattooing.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm very interested in that relationship and how it affects artists and design. Mm. And sometimes you come out with something that's like so much more amazing than you thought it was going to be. And sometimes you come out with something that's not as good as you thought it was going
to
be.
Right. And where did you go to school? You went to?
Northwestern.
Oh, right. Okay.
In Chicago.
Okay. And so then you came to the exhibition here in San Francisco. And
then
you were like, these are my people?
No.
No?
I actually I wasn't very focused on visiting the city. I just wanted information.
Oh, okay.
So when after school, Chicago had 30 days of no sunshine. And my roommate and I were crying ourselves to sleep.
Oh,
and we were like, why are we here? And we decided to move out of the country together. And so we moved to Japan. And we taught English there for a year and a half. We were in the same city, but not in the same neighborhood, but it made it a comfortable adventure, but still an adventure. Mm. And then we traveled for a long time. And then I had friends out here and they said, you're crazy if you don't think you're a West Coast person. And I'm like, I don't think so. And they're like, just come out and visit. So I set up 10 interviews because I'm a planner and came out to visit and got all 10 jobs. And it was right during the first boom, right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And, I was 23, 24.
Yeah.
And there were parties everywhere and you never paid for anything. And I'm this is heaven. I am definitely moving here.
I remember those days. Yes. That's so funny.
Yeah. And so, I just packed up and moved here and kind of started my San Francisco adventure. And now it's been 20 years. And
oh my God. And what was that job that you got?
It was actually because my degree was in art history. I was very idealistic and I decided that I needed to work in an art gallery, not to make money, to find out what people were really interested in, what they were buying and what was motivating them, you know? And that quickly evolved into something else.
Okay. Okay. And how long did you, I've never known you as not being an entrepreneur. You've been running your own businesses since I've known you. When did you make that transition from working for other people to working for yourself?
So I was working at the art gallery and I was meeting all of these artists and they all did secondary things like ceramics or handmade books. And then because it was the boom and all these events were happening, I decided that I could take all of those things and call event people or mostly call the president of companies because I don't know, they have some free time because I always got through to them and they would be like, oh, tell this person that I told you to call them. And then I would hook
up. You just called up the presidents?
Yeah.
You just Googled them or something? And then
I sat on the deck of my apartment in the Castro and every morning from 8 to noon, I would have coffee. I was the tannest I have ever been in my entire life. And I would call them. And then in the afternoon, I would go on, I would drive to companies and show them all of the things and they would
the art that these people were creating.
Yeah. And I would
you're becoming sort of a agent for them almost.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
oh,
I would get $25,000 jobs and they would make this money to do what they love. And they were this is amazing. And I'm great, you're in, I'm in. That's it.
That's amazing. I did not know this about you. That is so, your entrepreneurial gut instinct was turned on at that point.
That was my opportunity. My landlord at the time was what are you, you're making a career change. What are you doing? And I'm oh, I'm going on my own. This is my 24-year-old self,
Right.
And I'm I'm going on my own and I'm just going to call event people and sell them pieces from artists. And he was you should keep your other job because you have to pay me rent. Right. So he started watching me. And every time he saw me, he'd be how's the business going? And I'm it's great. It's booming. And I was paying my rent. So he knew I wasn't lying.
Right.
And he was I have this commercial space on Haight Street and why don't you go into business with me?
Uh-huh.
And I was no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm like making all this money. And, you know, I was 24, so making a lot of money was like not that much money. Right. But
you were able to pay your rent and live, which, it's saying something when you're 24. Yeah.
And then I started feeling like the bubble bursting a little bit. And I was like, gosh, I don't want to be like an ambulance chaser, you know, and like be like hounding these event people. And I was like, maybe it's time to make a little bit of a change. And so I actually went into business with him.
Okay. And that was what was the business?
It was a jewelry shop.
Okay. And what was that one called?
It was called Offbeat. I hate the name. He picked the name. I hate even saying those.
And that was, sorry, I made you say it. Sorry.
That's okay.
But so that was on Haight Street.
Yeah.
And that was, okay. And then did that evolve eventually into the tattoo shop or into Fiat Lux? Or?
So I just would say, I would say both.
Okay. So just to let the listeners know really quick, Marie has a tattoo shop called Rose Golds and a jewelry store called Fiat Lux.
Yeah.
Right now. And so we're learning the evolution. So sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So for the first jewelry store, I was not a jeweler. I was just really interested in jewelry. And I started thinking maybe I'll have workshops in the store because it was 1,200 square feet. So I started interviewing instructors and I actually met my jewelry mentor through that.
Oh, nice.
And so she taught myself and Alexi, my husband, who's my partner in Fiat Lux, how to make jewelry at different points.
Oh, wow. I remember the story that Alexi made you learned how to make a ring for you as one of your first gifts or something, right?
Yeah, for a Christmas present. Yeah. And my jewelry mentor was like, you're very brave. And she's like, I definitely will help you. And so she took Alexi under her wing and Alexi really loved it. And so he started making jewelry too.
That's amazing. And now you both make fine jewelry for the store?
We do.
That's amazing.
And we both have our different talents, which helps because when you're working with your partner in life, you want to have like different ways of working so you're not stepping on each other's toes. So he definitely is better at some things and I'm better at other things. So
well, that's good.
Great partnership.
And when we say that you guys make jewelry, these are like amazingly beautiful, like with precious stones, diamonds, and rubies.
We're pretty good, you know?
I mean, they're amazing. Like, you guys, I will post in the show notes links to obviously your stuff and it's just stunning. It's like, you know, something that you're proud to give as an engagement ring. And, you know, this is like, how long ago was that you learned how to
make I've been making jewelry for a long time now. Alexi has probably been doing it for about 6 years. But
only 6 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's much better at straight fabrication, which means like not carving something out of wax or doing anything like that. Like actually taking a chunk of gold and making something amazingly beautiful.
Oh, wow. And so, and you do more, you will like do the wax like molds or is that what you say? Okay.
I'm much more cautious.
Right.
Pretty much in everything, like gambling, life, investments, everything.
You guys have a good balance there, I think.
Yeah. He's a little more wild style. Right. And you know that it's definitely a good balance.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. And so then when did you open the tattoo shop?
About a year and a half after the jewelry store.
Okay.
So another space opened up and I met a tattooer and decided to just go for it.
That's awesome. And is that the same space now that you're in now or was it a different space?
Okay. Totally different space. So
in the Haight though? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I only moved it 2 blocks down. My partnership with the old landlord just wasn't going the way that I wanted it to. And so we split ways. And then I moved to a new location just off of Haight Street. And it's been really, really great for me.
It's the most beautiful tattoo shop I think probably exists. It's like so beautiful.
And, you know, the 14-foot skylight doesn't hurt. It used like a post office. It's just like
used to be a post office.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I probably went there when I first moved to San Francisco because my first apartment, like I have told you, was kitty corner from that place. And it was like It still looks like a slum. It was a slum.
Except now it's a slum that costs like 10 times as much.
Exactly. Exactly. I probably couldn't even afford it now. That's so cool. So how did you decide that you wanted to be so deep into jewelry as well as the tattooing? Like to own an establishment that revolves around both of those things?
I think that the magical part of San Francisco is that if you're committed and you have an interest and a dream, like someone will help you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it's all like tattooing and jewelry have always been a part of me in some way. I've always loved it. So it was just kind of that love that was manifested into these businesses. And I didn't know that this was going to happen, but people are really open here and they'll say, well, hey, I have this space. You know, if it was yours, what would you want to do with it?
Mm.
And then you tell them your dreams and all of a sudden you're like on a road to them.
Yeah. But you are also a very savvy businesswoman.
I wasn't always.
Okay.
So I think that especially, you know, when you get out of university, you think that you're like the blessed one and that everything, like someone should pay you $1 million right now.
And a lot of magical thinking happens when you graduate from college. Yeah.
So even though the relationship with my old business partner didn't work out, he taught me how to be really tough.
Mm.
A lot of things happened in the beginning for me that were really hard to deal with.
Mm.
And it changed me and I became really hard. And you need to be that way in business.
Oh, wow.
Like you can't have your feelings hurt.
Yeah.
You have to take like not your passion, but your emotions out of it.
Yeah.
And you have to do the same thing that, you know, the people did for you when you started. So you have to go to each person and say, what is this person's goal? What's their dream? How can I help them? You know, and work like that. So you have to like take your own personal things out of it.
Hmm. And so can you give an example of maybe one thing that really changed your trajectory, that like an example of something that you just alluded to?
There are many things, but I'll tell you two.
Okay.
So after I opened up the tattoo shop, it was like the first week someone from my competition threw a cinder block so hard through my window and it destroyed my whole display case. And
what?
Yeah. And I was terrified.
That is very terrifying and so infuriating.
Yeah. And, so I was scared. I was like, gosh, do I really want to do this?
Yeah.
Am I in danger?
Yeah.
Like, what's going to happen? Like, I had a corner store, so my whole store was windows. So I like went
my God.
In back to one of the booths and really sat down and had a small talk with myself, like, am I going to do this? And I decided, yeah, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
And so I called in some favors. I had the window repaired before the morning. I got there early.
Nice.
I sat behind the counter all day so the person who did it could walk by and I could be like, what? What happened?
How did you know that it was that person?
Because there was like a message on the cinder block.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And like full on, like mob action.
Yeah.
Like, that's so crazy.
I didn't know exactly who it was, but then I found out
you did
later after asking people. Yeah.
That's intense.
So that was something. And I do feel like part of that was because I was a female in the tattoo industry and because I wasn't a tattooer, which is not the most normal thing. And then besides that, you know, just being in the shop and having vendors come in and having them talk to everyone except for me, because I was a woman as well.
Oh, wow.
And the guys always thought it was really funny. And they would be like, oh, sorry, you have to talk to her and like point at me. And I'd be like, well, you're either giving me like a 25% discount or we're not doing business together now, you know. So
now that you've officially offended me, forget it.
There's the door, or like you're really gonna have to work for this one,
right.
You know.
Good for you.
So those kinds of things like really took me out of being starry-eyed
mm-hmm.
and really made me tough, and I needed it.
Yeah, you do need it. I mean, I've never run a small business, but from everything I hear, it is not easy.
Yeah.
And you've been doing it a long time, so yeah. You're such a success story.
Yeah, and actually, now I find at this point in my career and after having a child,
mm-hmm.
that I've become a lot softer, and
oh,
it's really?
Really
good for me, you know, because I was like getting a little too hard.
Mm.
And then now it's like having a child and like, I don't know, it kind of renews your faith in humanity.
Yeah.
Like they're so sweet and you're like, oh my God, what happened to all of us? You know?
Yeah.
And now I'm more likely to say, oh, you need to take a trip to Iceland. You should do it.
Yeah.
You know,
like your employees or
yeah. Before I'd be like, well, why don't you do it when it's not busy season?
Right.
You know? And so now I think I have the confidence and the businesses are successful enough that I don't have to be that hard. And
yeah.
It's been kind of freeing in a way.
That's so interesting. And it also seems like the path to maturing as an entrepreneur, like learning from everything in your life and
yes.
just like learning how that it can all go into like good energy towards what you're building.
Definitely.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that about having a kid has like made this little shift.
Yeah.
Speaking of having a child, you had a child. He's four.
Three.
Three. He's going to mm-hmm. be four in
April.
April.
Next year.
Oh, he just turned four. I mean, three. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make him older. and you waited a little while to have a child. You were, I don't know how old you were, and I don't, do you want to tell me how old you were
yeah,
when you
yeah.
had your baby?
I was 40.
You were 40. Okay.
And I like was just turning 40 when I was having him.
Yeah.
So I was like trying not to be offended by nurses being like, you have to take all these tests because you're really old for having a kid. And I'm like, okay, guys, everybody calm down. I'll take every test, but like, just stop putting me in the hyper critical zone,
it's,
you know?
I know. Well, it's isn't it like after 35, really, that they start giving you like the amnio and the everything? Like
yes, but then after 40,
oh,
there's a whole new set. And I'm like, I'm having him 3 days after I turn 40.
Like,
so
can
calm
we chill
down.
Out, please.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Did you? I mean, and also in this area, it's so normal to have
yes.
to be a little bit older as a parent.
Definitely.
Did you feel like you were waiting a long time or did you just feel like this was the natural progression of things?
I was actually not ready at all until that point.
Mm.
And I had always imagined that I was going to have kids. And then I was like, well, if I want kids, I can have one on my own. And now I think that's like a little crazy.
Now that you know how hard it is.
Yes, yeah. It is very hard.
Yeah.
And then I got past that because I really loved my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Alexi, my husband, who was like, actually, I really want a child. So, you know, it could be a deal breaker for me.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, whoa, I'm going to have a minute. And I took
yeah.
3 months deciding because
wow.
I really wanted to like make the decision what was going to be right for my life.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that I had Axe. He's like the best.
Can
but
you
I,
say his full name for us?
Yeah, his full name is Anaximander.
And does he have a middle name?
His middle name is my last name.
Okay, so Anaximander McCarthy
Angelitas.
Angelitas.
He is going to hate me when he's five and needs to learn
to
write
how to
his
write
name, but you know, it'll be worth it in the long
totally.
Run.
Totally. Love it.
But I made the decision and it did two things. I was like so happy that I had him and how it changed me. And then I also had such a respect for people who decide not to have children.
Yeah.
Because it's like that life is so good too, because
yeah.
you can really focus on what you want to do
yeah.
personally.
That's so true. I think about that a lot because I think about, you know, before I had a child and I didn't adopt Frida till I was, I don't know, I was 44, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and my life very well could have been a life without having my own child.
Yeah.
And when I think about that, I'm like, that would have been just as valid too. You know, like it doesn't make your life any less important or whatever, just if you're not a parent. It's just a
totally.
Different choice. So do you feel like normal age in San Francisco to be a mother of a child your age, or do you ever feel like just, I'm just projecting because I am always the oldest mom. Like, I know that I'm pretty much always the oldest mom in the room.
Yeah.
And, but I also realize the more I think about it, I'm probably the only one really thinking about it, and that I should just like shut up about it and just relax about it. But anyway, so that's, I'm just curious.
This is like a really, really hard question for me, because my first answer is, oh, I'm totally in the median. I'm like the average age for a parent with, you know, a 3-year-old child in San Francisco. But then I just realized, I think everyone is my age, and I don't know, I don't know why that is, but even people I've worked with for a long time, like very mature, you know, late 20s people, usually it's Alexi who makes a reference to something like Spuds McKenzie, and their face will like go totally blank, and I'll be like, babe, they don't know what that is.
So amazing.
Spuds McKenzie actually happened, and Alexi was like, you don't know? And I'm like, oh my God, that's so random.
That is really random. And actually was really a long time ago. Like, I was even, I think, in high school. But that's an awesome reference.
Yeah.
Because people should know about Spuds McKenzie, really. But I love that you feel like everyone's the same age as you, because that's really the definition of this whole perennials thing that I'm obsessed with right now.
Yeah.
That is what it is. It's like sort of, you know, not finding the number of someone's age super important. Like just being like, we all kind of have the same outlook on life and we have a lot in common and we like hanging out or whatever, even if you don't know who Spuds McKenzie is, like I'll be your friend. You know, it's like, that's, and I think that's why, I mean, I think that's partly why we're friends, because I kind of was attracted to that whole kind of vibe that you had, I guess. But also because of your awesome sunglasses and your goat hammer.
Right.
Google it. But so now that you are sort of at this point in your career where you're, both of your businesses are very successful, it sounds like you're kind of really sharing the love, like you're starting a mentor group, but then you were starting to describe that. I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah. So I am usually a loner. I like to work on projects by myself. I don't like to look at a lot of other jewelry because I'm afraid that it affects my design. Mm-hmm. So I've always kind of been in this bubble. And just recently, I did a talk for the WJA in Fiat Lux in the jewelry shop. And there was this whole community who came out to hear me speak. And I was like, oh, what am I doing? Like, I should be active and helping young designers. So basically, I made a framework to have a mentorship program. And it's going to be like 10 young designers, and there are going to be 4 mentors who are all local. And then at the end, we're going to have a show, and whoever's work is fully developed and, you know, we think is the most innovative, we're going to give them a booth at a trade show.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's a great structure for it. Yeah. I love that. And when is that kicking off?
It'll kick off later this year. And then the show will be the JCK show in June of next year.
And is that here or where's
the
show?
It's in Las Vegas.
In Vegas. I figured it was. Why are all the jewelry shows in Vegas?
I think it's because it's cheap to get to.
Okay.
And I don't know.
I do kind of associate diamonds in Vegas, though.
Yeah, totally.
For some whatever reason.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Cool. Well, that's amazing. What do you see Fiat Lux and, Fiat Lux and Rose Golds? Are you sort of happy with the path that they're both on? Are you planning any big changes in the future?
I'm not. I'm actually very happy with what's happening there. And I think that puts me in a place where I can help other people too. So I've done. Of course, we're going to have innovations and we're going to have new ideas, but I don't think they're going to stray that far from the path that they're on now.
Because it's working. It's working so well.
It's working and it's meaningful
for
clients and for us.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't know like what more you can ask for.
Well, what about another? Would you ever open like a second shop anywhere?
Absolutely not.
No? Really?
Never, okay. Ever, ever.
Really?
Oh,
why?
I shouldn't be that.
This is being recorded.
I mean, in the only case, it would be someone who is like my personal mentee, like one of the managers of the shop that I respect and trust.
Like you'd have to trust 100%.
Yeah. Like, and if they were moving and they were like, I really want to do this in New York or I don't know, somewhere really fun to visit, like Paris or something.
Somewhere you want to go.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's very smart.
Then I might think about that. Mm-hmm. But I think that one of the problems with small business is that you just don't have enough time to, like, I can't take on hobbies, you know? I can't take on anything else. Like, my time is so restricted. So then imagine if you have another location somewhere and you can't really, it's so difficult and you're wondering if
like
everyone's trustworthy and it's too much for me.
Yeah.
I don't want that kind of life.
That sounds like a lot of stress, actually. Yeah.
It's interesting because always like accountants try to get you to open up new locations because they're like, oh, it's easy. You already have the formula down. Mm. But what I do is not formulaic.
Right.
And so it's so different from place to place, from location and city, that you can't, that's not really how to do it.
Right. Yeah. I know it seems like the most logical thing to like grow, like you want to scale or something, you know, you want to, but then it's also not as easy as it sounds.
I also don't want anything to feel like a job.
Right. I guess, yeah, that's what they say. You're successful if you don't feel like you're working when you're working.
Yeah.
Do you have any, like organizational tricks and tips up your sleeve? Because I need them badly.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I mean, get a great accountant.
Oh. My husband refuses to let anyone else do it. He does it every year.
I'm like, if anyone knows of a really great accountant, let me know. Because mine is like pretty good.
But just kind of pretty good.
Yeah. I think depending on what you're doing, it's really valuable to have somebody you can bounce ideas off of.
Mm-hmm.
So Alexi is a very good and very harsh editor for me. Like sometimes I'll design a collection and he'll be like, what does this mean?
Mm.
Oh, it looks cool. No way. Like you have to give it meaning.
Oh, wow.
So I think especially for jewelers, they're by themselves a lot.
Yes.
And so if you don't have someone, not just like a, you know, another jeweler who will be kind of a yes man, like they'll be like, oh, yeah, that's great. Good for you. You know, you need somebody to be really, really honest with you. So I think that's really important.
I actually really need that. Do you think Alexi would do that for me?
Probably.
For free.
Yeah.
Because I think that I've scared Karosh, my husband, into never saying anything negative.
I worry about your friendship, though, because Alexi is pretty harsh.
Yeah. Well, I guess I would have to set myself up to be okay with it. Like,
yeah.
I would have to make myself be okay with it.
You'll come out better in the end, for
sure. I might have to hit him up for that. Because Karosh is pretty much terrified of saying he's always, because he was my editor for a period of time at Wired.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like, I was like a really young writer and reporter. And I was like, what, you're changing my words? Aren't they good? Like, and I would get really sensitive about it and cry too much. And when he was my editor, that was his job to edit and do my stuff. But then when I would ask for his advice when he was no longer actually my editor, I think he was just too afraid. He was like, yeah, it's great. So yeah, you have to let go of that sensitivity at a certain point if
Definitely.
You want to grow and get better.
I mean, in that situation where he gave me that editorial bit, I was like, okay, I'm just going to excuse myself for a minute. And I was just like, okay, that was pretty harsh, you know, but I went in and I'm like, you're right. And I'm going to start over. And, you know, I came up with a collection that was even better. Yeah.
That says a lot also about your willingness to be open-minded, because it is very hard to do that, especially when you're dealing with a spouse. Mm-hmm. My God. I mean,
yeah.
Because that's like the one of the people who's most important in your life, like, you know, criticizing you, and it doesn't feel good, but it's like the outcome.
I think like throughout my life, I've met a lot of people who are older than me who are extremely open-minded, and they always end up being like the really intelligent people or really successful people. And so I think I've tried to frame myself around that. And I think that that's also a good tip for being an entrepreneur, to be very open-minded and to ask a lot of questions and always like think about things in new ways, you know?
Yeah. And not be afraid of kind of maybe shifting your ideas a little bit.
Definitely.
And, yeah.
And so don't have an ego.
Yeah. It's so hard.
Yeah.
Especially when you're creative, because like what you're creating is always like a personal in some way, you know, so it's really hard to like
separate
let the ego
yourself. Yeah.
Go. Yeah. So yeah, I wanted to ask you about your personal tattoos. You obviously, we know that you have a tattoo shop, but you have a lot of tattoos on your body. And I'm really curious to hear about how you decided to start getting tattoos and the evolution of like how it progressed over time.
So it actually took me a long time to get my first tattoo because I just couldn't decide. I couldn't make the commitment, which is funny to say.
Yeah.
Because most people, it's like very spontaneous, but I felt the importance of it for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I had been in tattoo parlors. Like my brother took me to one when I was 16. And back then, your brother could sign for you.
Oh, so you could have gotten one at that age, but you chose not to.
No, there was this big biker guy and he gave me a book of like hearts and stars and fairies. And I was like, none of these designs are good. Like I'm not going to get a tattoo today. And he just shook his head and we like left the tattoo shop.
You are a smart 16-year-old. Oh my gosh.
But, you know, people ask me how many tattoos I have, and I'm like, I have one tattoo. It's like my entire body, basically, you know? And it's just like anything else for me. Like, I feel like, you know, when you're in the industry, you have to commit. I think commitment is one of the biggest things. Like a mentee looking for a mentor, if you say, this is my dream, I'm committed to it, will you help me? People will help you.
You know? Because they know that you're going to put the energy into it. They're not going to like help you and then find out that all their efforts were just kind of for nothing. Like, you're going to persevere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In saying that, I don't mean to downplay the importance of like even the smallest tattoo for some people. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so meaningful for them. And I feel that in the shop all the time. And I think that's important too.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, being in the industry, I knew that I was going to be heavily tattooed.
Yeah.
My parents probably didn't know quite as much, but, you know.
How old were you then when you got your first one? Or your
I think I was 22.
Okay.
Yeah.
So done with college.
Yeah.
And it was probably here then in San Francisco. Or no, were you here? Or
I did get it here.
Okay.
But I don't know if I was living here yet.
Okay. And how do you, like being a person with so many tattoos that are visible, like you have them on your hands, you can see some of one on your neck, and do you feel like conscious of that walking around in the world, like that, you know, people might be like interested and like checking them out, or how does that feel? Like
100%. I feel it all the time, every day, every minute. So when someone comes in, and especially if they don't have a lot of tattoos and they want a tattoo on their hand, I feel totally fine saying absolutely not. Like, we can't do it. I'm sure you can find somebody who will do it, but no. So people are, I feel interest in my tattoos. I feel scorn.
Like, really?
She's so pretty. Why did she do that to herself?
Oh my God.
More like visiting the Midwest, but
right.
Sometimes here too. I interviewed at a preschool And I did 3 interviews. And my last interview there, the person couldn't stop looking at my hand tattoos. And that hadn't happened to me in so long, because we live in San Francisco, that I was like, halfway through the interview in my head, I was like, oh, you're staring at my hand tattoos. Oh, my God. It is in some ways what I am, but and it separates me from a lot of the population. Mm-hmm. But it's a very strange thing to deal with.
Yeah. Do you feel that that's becoming less, that you get that sort of scorn, or is it?
Actually, no.
No?
People are very used to small to mid-sized tattoos, okay. but still tattoos on the neck, hands, face. I don't have any facial tattoos.
Do you think you ever will?
No, I don't.
Okay.
You know, that's not as common.
Yeah.
Or having like a lot of tattoos isn't as common.
Right.
Even if you see it on TV, it's a little bit different than seeing it in person.
Right.
So I think I'll still always feel that.
Yeah.
And there'll be a backlash later where people like aren't into tattoos anymore.
Right.
And that's okay too. I feel like ideas on tattoos are so varied and it's such a personal decision for each individual that it's not going to matter. Like if you have a lot of tattoos and they go out of style, it doesn't matter because
it
was your personal choice, especially when you have a lot.
Right.
So I get tattooed by mostly just 2 people.
Okay.
And the one who's done the majority of my work is a very traditional Japanese tattooer and she's female.
Mm-hmm.
So she would have never tattooed my hands or my chest.
Like as the first thing. You had to, or she just never would have.
Never.
Oh, they don't do that ever.
No.
Oh, okay.
So it was a hard decision for me because I knew she was doing most of my bodysuit. So doing that was a little bit unheard of, you know?
Oh, wow.
But for me personally, I still really wanted to do it. And what I tell people is I've been in the industry for almost 20 years and I got my hands tattooed like 3 years ago. So
you were ready.
Yeah.
You were like you had given it enough thought.
Yeah. I thought about it for a while.
Right.
Yeah.
And what is your thinking behind why you are interested in having tattoos?
You know, I just was in this like interesting conversation at dinner and an old friend of mine who I hadn't seen for a long time, he teaches high school.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about teaching a class and he was talking about buying a car.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of his talk was you shouldn't buy a Mercedes to define who you are just because it's expensive. You should buy a practical car. And these are all the costs associated with both cars. And this is why you should do that. And he was actually talking to another person at dinner.
Okay.
And I wasn't involved in the conversation, but I was so annoyed. And I was like, hold on. I'm like, do you need a guest speaker for this class? Because I would like to go in and tell people to go out and buy like a 1983 Porsche Targa because your car is an extension of who you are. It does represent you. Your clothing represents your aesthetic. Your car represents your aesthetic. Your interiors represent your aesthetic. And for me, my body represents my aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
So tattoos are like a natural way for me to kind of show something different and to do something that I think is visually impactful.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. Well, so speaking of waiting a long time to get a tattoo, as you know, I just got my first tattoo in your shop when I was, I hadn't turned 50 yet. So I was like a few weeks shy of turning 50.
Yeah. P.S. Kurosh took me aside and said, I really love Kristen's tattoo. And I was like, yes.
Oh, good. Yeah, because as you know, I did not tell him before I went. Or did I tell you that?
No.
I didn't tell him that I was, like, I had talked about it for forever.
Yeah.
I didn't tell him on that day because I think in the back of my mind, I was in a little bit of denial, even though I had been thinking about it for so long.
Yeah.
Hence my last minute, like, I'm not sure if I have a babysitter. That was just, it really was a little bit of like, oh my God, I forgot that I don't have my babysitter, but also like, oh, maybe he'll want to cancel it now. You know, like I just was really, I was nervous. And
your first tattoo is terrifying.
Yeah, it was
well, for everybody.
Yeah, so I just kind of went into this zone where, like, this is happening and just stop second guessing it because it's happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I was getting my tattoo, did I tell you I had to make him stop for a minute?
Jared told me.
He told you?
Yeah.
What did he say?
He just said you got dizzy and that you had only eaten a salad.
Yeah, I had only eaten a salad. I mean, I got this like quinoa salad thinking that it was like
enough. Have to eat,
you have
like,
to like eat. You told me too. Yeah. You totally told me.
Because my ultimate goal was to get him to stop.
Yeah.
So I knew that if I said yes, he would stop.
I mean, even we're professionals, you know, and we sometimes don't eat ourselves before we get tattooed. And
like, we're really scared of people passing out.
So, like, of course, that's the first thing you
even
ask.
Though we see it every once in a while, it doesn't happen that often. And it's kind of traumatizing for us, too.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. So I actually, you know, I feel a little bit bad that I sort of fibbed about it. But the reason I thought of it, because we were talking about candy bars.
Yeah.
And the other guy who was there.
Yeah.
He was like, I'll go get you some candy. And I was like, okay. And he was like, what do you want? And I said, some kind of, I was hoping for like dark chocolate, like a dark chocolate bar or something, you know?
I mean, that whole conversation's ridiculous. They think you're going to faint and they're like, well, what kind of chocolate do you prefer? Do you like Mounds bars or Snickers?
He was like, what do you want? I was like, but I was hoping like for like a, you know, 85% cacao dark chocolate bar or whatever. But he brings me a dark chocolate Snickers. No, Milky Way.
Weird.
They make dark chocolate Milky Ways now. And he brought me two. And I was like, I'm going to try to only eat one.
You're like, I'll just take a bite. Thank you. Please, like, throw the other one away.
Of course, I ate the whole thing.
Yeah.
But I did not eat the other one. I was like, save this one for some other person who's going to faint. Or is it mostly young people who are getting tattoos? Or what's the, do you have any idea what the average age is? Or?
I think that a lot of people are like in their 20s, but my clientele ranges a lot. Yeah, it really, it's varied.
It's a range. Well, I'm excited to get another one. Well, I have to finish this one first and get lots of dark chocolate Milky Ways to prepare myself. And then, yeah, and I want to get it. Yeah, I want to get more. I know you won't let me get them in places where I'll regret it. So I'm counting on you.
Sorry, Kristen, no facial tattoos
oh,
for
damn.
You.
I was ready for the tear.
Well, you have to kill someone first.
Right.
So I don't think that's going to happen.
Shit, that's right. Okay.
You can't actually kill people with kindness. Right. So
if I do, then I'm getting the tear.
Yeah.
Marie, thank you so much
for
taking the time, especially knowing how busy you are running all these businesses and having a child and everything. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kristen.